Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. There are two disorders that our article today is going to look at that are considered BFRB, or body-focused repetitive behaviors. Trichotillomania, sometimes called trich or compulsive hair pulling, is a mental health disorder marked by the compulsive urge to pull out one's hair that results in physical injury and impairment in daily functioning. And the other is skin-picking disorder, which probably needs no definition. Before you decide not to listen, because it has nothing to do with you or anyone you know, consider that it is estimated that between 0.6% and 4% of the overall population will have experienced trichotillomania in their lifetime. This means that approximately 2.5 million Americans may be affected by this condition at some point in their lives. So settle in for the reading of an article published August 23, 2018 for Mosaic, written by Sarah Tulpos and titled, Why It's So Hard to Treat Compulsive Hair Pulling. Christina Pearson was 14 years old when she started pulling out her hair, creating bald patches on her head. She was taken to a psychiatrist, but in 1970 there was no name for her disorder and certainly no treatment. The doctor issued a psychiatric discharge that removed Pearson from high school. In that moment, she felt relief. Going to high school meant that somebody might pull off her hat and reveal that her head was mostly bare, a possibility she found so frightening that anything was better than that. In the ensuing months, Pearson holed up at home, pulling out her hair and feeling, she says, like a monster. Scared and searching for relief, she eventually decided to leave. I hitchhiked across Mexico at 14 and was doing peyote out in the desert, all kinds of things, she says. I really lived a very fringe life. At 15, she started picking her skin, her body frequently covered with open sores. By 20, she was addicted to drugs and alcohol. At the age of 30, Pearson finally got sober. She'd started a small telecommunications business with a friend in Santa Cruz, California. In 1989, she received a phone call from her mother, who had just listened to a story on the radio about a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine. There's a name for what you used to do, Pearson's mother told her, not knowing that Pearson still pulled her hair. The news that there was a name, trichotillomania, rocked my world, she says. After decades of feeling shame and isolation, she began to feel hope. There were others living out there with the same condition. Pearson started a support group. A Seattle news network invited Pearson to appear on air, where she spoke about her life and provided a number for a trichotillomania hotline that she planned to operate herself. She returned home to more than 600 messages. People were crying and sobbing and begging for help, says Pearson, who spent a week calling each person back. It was the best therapy I ever had because I heard my life coming out of other people's mouths. One night in bed, she had what she calls a peak experience or spiritual vision. Pearson decided to walk away from her business and devote her life to improving public awareness of trichotillomania. Step into any classroom or coffee shop and the odds are at least one person in the room has a body-focused repetitive behavior, BFRB, such as trichotillomania or skin-picking disorder. People with BFRBs perform repetitive self-grooming activities, such as picking, pulling, or biting. These can cause emotional distress and damage to the body, but the people performing the behaviors can't stop. At their most extreme, these conditions are life-threatening. A significant minority of people with trichotillomania, commonly called trich, ingest their pulled hairs. Over time, the hair can block the intestine and require surgical removal. Skin picking can lead to infections that require intravenous antibiotics and skin grafting. More commonly, BFRBs take an emotional and social toll. They often begin in late childhood or early adolescence, making kids vulnerable to bullies. Echoing the experiences of many, a man in his late 20s described middle school as absolute hell because kids perceived him as the weird kid with missing eyelashes. Another woman, now 30, recalled watching her classmates play keep away with the wig they'd snatched off her head. Furthermore, BFRBs are often a source of conflict between child and parent, which can heighten a child's feelings of shame and isolation. Meanwhile, in adults, the condition can lead to fear of intimacy, missed job interviews, and hours lost each day to picking and pulling. Individuals living with BFRBs often keep their condition a secret, hiding the physical effects with makeup, wigs, and layers of clothing. As a result, many are surprised to learn just how common these disorders are. Some experts estimate that 2 to 5% of people have TRIC, and roughly 5% of people have skin picking disorder, also referred to as dermatillomania or exorciation disorder. Precise numbers are not available, however, because there's been no large-scale global study of BFRBs. Although TRIC has appeared in the medical literature for more than a century, it was not officially included in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM, until 1987, a full 17 years after Pearson made her first visit to a psychiatrist and 6 years after I entered the first grade and started pulling my hair, too. My mother took me to a dermatologist who didn't offer any advice. As it turned out, I was a part of a subset of kids, including toddlers and even babies, whose symptoms simply go away without any kind of treatment. By the end of the school year, my hair pulling had stopped. For most individuals, BFRBs are chronic, lasting years, even decades. Skin picking disorder was added to the DSM in 2013. We were over the moon ecstatic when it was given its own diagnostic label, says Nancy Coithen, the director of the Trichotillomania Clinic and Research Unit at Massachusetts General Hospital. A diagnostic label validates people's experiences and encourages them to seek treatment, she says. In the absence of a name, the tendency had been to think, I don't know anybody else who has this. I must be really weird, explains Coithen. Now, both disorders are included in the chapter on obsessive-compulsive and related disorders. On the surface, OCD and BFRBs share similar characteristics. Both involve strong urges to perform repetitive behaviors, but unlike OCD compulsions, BFRBs are soothing, even pleasurable, and the behaviors are rarely the result of the specific obsessions that characterize OCD. This distinction matters because the conditions benefit from different kinds of behavioral therapies. And whereas medication is a first-line treatment for OCD in the United States, for example, there is currently no Food and Drug Administration-approved medication to treat BFRBs. In fact, compared with better-known psychiatric conditions such as OCD, BFRBs remain markedly under-researched. Historically, there's been almost no funding for these disorders, says Coithen. Funding usually goes to conditions that are seen as significantly affecting quality of life or that make it difficult to function in the workplace. BFRBs can do both, but, says Coithen, they've been misunderstood as bad habits that lazy people have. This obscures the critical distinction between ordinary self-grooming, who doesn't occasionally pick a scab or pluck a hair, and the clinical case where the behavior goes on and on, causing significant distress or impairment while the person feels wholly unable to stop. This person began renting booths at professional conferences. In the early years, psychologists would walk by and actually make fun of her, pulling their own hair. Pearson says that one dermatologist warned her that people who pick their skin and pull their hair are often psychotic. She recalls one young man who'd been told by a mental health professional that pulling out his hair was like public masturbation and he needed to stop. In another conversation, a Swedish doctor insisted that Swedes don't get TRIC. Pearson suspects that some of the stigma stems from the fact that grooming is associated with other animals, cats, dogs, mice, and people don't want to acknowledge humans' connection to the animal kingdom. Something else that contributed to the misunderstanding was that Trick was considered an exceedingly rare disorder. The first prevalence study wasn't published until 1991, and at that time, the DSM criteria for Trick were more stringent than they are today. In addition to having a strong impulse to pull hair, resulting in hair loss, individuals needed to experience tension prior to pulling and gratification or relief while pulling. Consequently, researchers found that 0.6% of the general U.S. college population had met the DSM criteria at some point in their lives, but noted that among this group, pulling leading to visible hair loss was reported by 1.5% of men and 3.5% of women. The causes of BFRBs are still poorly understood, though individuals' responses to different medications may provide clues to BFRB's biological underpinnings. For example, medications such as Prozac, which target the neurotransmitter serotonin, have not proven effective in reducing BFRBs for most people, though experts note that some individuals may benefit. Two small randomized controlled trials testing N-acetylcysteine, NAC, an amino acid that can be purchased in health food stores, resulted in marked reductions in both hair pulling and skin picking for roughly half of study participants. Though some receiving a placebo also showed improvements, 16% demonstrating reduced hair pulling, 19% reduced skin picking. NAC influences glutamate, a neurotransmitter involved in reward pathways. A small neuroimaging study also showed impairment of reward pathways in people with Trick, but larger studies are needed to confirm these findings. Liz Atkin, a British artist with skin picking disorder, is at the front of the room, setting hand wipes on tables. She wears a red cardigan over a t-shirt sporting splotches of orange, yellow, and green. "We're going to get messy," she says to four girls sitting in the front row. Her enthusiasm seems entirely genuine, yet impossible for 8:30 a.m. It's a Saturday in April, and I'm attending the 25th annual TLC conference for BFRBs. This year it's in San Francisco. The conference is just one of the ways that TLC aims to help people directly. I'm here with nearly 500 others, including individuals with BFRBs, their families, clinicians, and researchers. This session is an art class for kids aged 11 and under. "What we're going to do is make our marks," says Atkin, after roughly a dozen kids have taken seats and introduced themselves. She holds up a stick of charcoal and explains, "It's a piece of wood that's been burned. I have compulsive skin picking, and charcoal really helps me." Atkin distributes the charcoal and paper and asks the kids to make a dot. Paul Klee said, "A line is a dot taking a walk," she says, holding up her own sheet of paper and making a black spot. From there, she demonstrates various rubbing and smudging techniques before bringing out pastels so the kids can add color. Atkin asks, "Why are we working with stuff that's messy? Why is that useful?" "We're using materials that have a texture to them." Later, she'll explain to me that for many, BFRBs are texture-based disorders. Art engages the body and mind, giving the person a focus other than the BFRB. I'm sitting in a row with a boy and a girl. I overhear the boy ask, "What's your thing? Mine's skin picking." The girl says matter-of-factly, "Mine's trichotillomania." They fall back into silence, drawing on the black paper. It's taken science some time to catch up with what people with BFRBs have known for years. For many, there's a strong sensory component to the disorder. A pair of studies published in 2017 and 2018 were the first to report that individuals with BFRBs have higher rates of sensory over-responsivity to external sensations than the general population. In other words, they respond intensely to things like sounds and textures. The phenomenon, also sometimes referred to as sensory integration dysfunction or sensory processing disorder, was first described in the 1970s by the occupational therapist Jean Ayers. Since then, sensory over-responsivity has been most frequently studied in association with autism and more recently in OCD. In one of the studies, people with TRIC were twice as likely to have severe to extreme sensory over-responsivity to touch and sound. One study participant described her struggle with clothing. "My tactile discomfort lies in how I feel in clothes. They always feel too tight and uncomfortable as soon as I step out of the house. For this reason, I only go out when absolutely necessary, school or work." Others at the conference share similar experiences. "I used to throw things at my brother who was just regularly playing. I'd throw books at him because noises were too much," says one woman who still struggles with high-pitched sounds. Like many others with TRIC, when she pulls her hair, she's looking for a certain type. "I'm looking for coarseness in those hairs. I'm looking for hairs that aren't straight, hairs that are curly, hairs that don't feel right, that are too long or too short. For me, it's a very tactile disorder," she says. When researchers talk about BFRBs, they often speak of subtypes to acknowledge, among other things, that people with BFRBs may pick and pull for very different reasons. One person might pull her hair at night as a way of winding down for sleep. Another might pick his skin out of boredom. Another might pull out his eyelashes under stress. For some people, all these things and more might be triggers. Why? No one can say for sure, but many of my conversations with affected individuals included mention of the work of a psychologist named Fred Penzel. In the early 2000s, Penzel introduced the stimulus regulation model of trichotillomania, based on his work with patients. It would appear that pulling might, therefore, be an external attempt on the part of a genetically prone individual to regulate an internal state of sensory imbalance, he writes. According to this model, a person with a BFRB is exposed to the same levels of environmental stimulation as others, but their nervous system is unable to easily manage it. It is as if the person is standing in the center of a seesaw or on a high wire, with overstimulation on one side and understimulation on the other, and must lean in either direction by pulling at different times to remain balanced, he writes. "Picking or pulling adds or subtracts stimulation," says Karen Pickett, an Ohio-based therapist. "I have yet to find someone that this model doesn't apply to some degree. Why does this matter? Because the picking and pulling actually serve a purpose. This is why the behaviors can be so difficult to stop." A number of studies have found that some individuals with BFRBs have difficulty regulating their emotions. A 2013 review notes that as a group, people with BFRBs have higher rates of psychiatric conditions, such as depression and anxiety, than the general population. In addition, many report that their BFRBs provide relief from negative emotions, including boredom, tension, anxiety, and frustration. "Several of the people I interviewed told me their BFRBs started during a period of negative emotion. Anila Idnani started pulling her eyebrows and eyelashes as an adolescent after moving to a new town where she felt like an outsider and was bullied at school. For her, pulling served as a coping mechanism. A couple of years later, Idnani's father died of cancer. I didn't know how to deal with it," she says. "As a society, we don't talk about uncomfortable things, and so we have to find ways to deal with them." She hid her condition into adulthood. 3 years ago, she started seeing a psychologist who helped her unpack some of her emotions. Haley O'Sullivan started picking her skin at the age of 20, a year after a traumatic sexual experience. "It started with 2 hours in the mirror picking at ingrown hairs like on my armpits or my bikini line," she recalls. "It was also picking at zits on my face and other places on my body." For several years, O'Sullivan led a support group in Boston, and she's working on starting a group in New Hampshire, where she lives now. She is careful to point out that not everyone with a BFRB has experienced trauma. In her case, however, skin picking is my body's way of trying to say, "Hey, I'm not okay." Skin picking creates a positive sensation for her, at least in the short term. Obviously, it doesn't feel good emotionally afterward when you're like, "Oh man, look at this damage I caused." O'Sullivan has seen several therapists and has been successfully treated for post-traumatic stress disorder and depression. But she says she feels a little stuck in her BFRB recovery. She's done a lot of research, but lacks access to a specialized clinician. There simply aren't enough therapists with expertise, she says. And even once you find someone, the clinician may have a long waiting list, and insurance might only cover a handful of sessions. It's not really conducive to a full recovery, she says. In many countries, including high-income places, there are treatment gaps for mental health. I spoke with a graduate student from Scotland, Marta Isabor, who sought help for her own skin-picking disorder in her late 20s. Isabor was offered conventional cognitive behavioral therapy, which helped her understand why she picks, but she wasn't offered treatments that place more emphasis on minimizing the repetitive behaviors, such as habit reversal training or the comprehensive model for behavioral treatment, a specific intervention created to treat BFRBs. Currently, the treatment for BFRBs with the most empirical support is a type of cognitive behavioral therapy called habit reversal training, developed in the 1970s as a treatment for tics. During this therapy, a person learns to recognize the context in which pulling or picking is most likely to occur. With this awareness, people then can then plan to substitute a competing response. For example, when faced with an urge to pick, someone might instead make a fist or play with a fidget toy. In some studies, more than half of adults with TRIC achieve short-term improvement. However, some find it difficult to maintain the results over time. The psychologist Omar Rahman recently conducted a promising study of habit reversal training in kids with TRIC. He says that the goal of the therapy is to give the brain an opportunity to become habituated to the urge, meaning you can ignore it or respond with a substitute behavior. Over the years, Rahman has come to believe that there's really no way around this if you can't learn to manage the urge, which may explain why habit reversal training doesn't help everyone or why improvement doesn't always last. For this reason, researchers and clinicians have increasingly sought to augment habit reversal training with other means of helping people with their urges. For example, mindfulness-based strategies can help a person observe and accept negative emotions, sensations, and urges without needing to act on them by pulling or picking. Christina Pearson stumbled into mindfulness in the early 1990s after a series of therapists and medications were unable to help her. Nobody knew what to do, she says, so she started paying attention, observing her thoughts, feelings, and muscle movements. I'd been always seeking higher awareness, she says, but now I wanted to identify the roadmap that would free me from a behavioral prison. She notes that the kids who get BFRBs are sensitive and smart. Do you want to drug that away? No. What you want to do is say, hey, how do I create the psychological trellis for this being to evolve and be of service to the world? Around this time, the psychologist Charles Mansueto had been seeing BFRB clients and developed the comprehensive model for behavioral treatment. This model recognizes that a variety of triggers may cause someone to want to pick or pull. Thoughts, emotions, sensory experiences, specific body movements, such as stroking one's hair, and environment. Today, Mansueto and his colleagues are in the process of running a randomized controlled trial to test the approach. We may seem like we have it together now, but we haven't always, says Bridget Perez. She and her 19-year-old daughter, Jessie, are leading a conference session titled Parent-Child Journey, Building a Relationship and Finding Acceptance. They're both wearing T-shirts that Jessie designed that say Trickster on the front. The room is packed. Bridget recalls one morning when Jessie was 14 and sitting at the table eating breakfast. I'm standing over her and I go, oh my God, because there was a huge bald spot in the back of her head. Jessie had always had very long, curly hair. But over the ensuing years, she went from a gorgeous, long, curly-haired girl to having bald spots, to hiding the bald spots, to the hair thinning out and just kind of hanging. I screamed, I cried, I yelled, I mourned the loss of her hair, says Bridget. Like many parents, her first response was to want to fix the problem. Unlike an earlier generation of parents, Bridget knew the word trichotillomania and was able to use the internet to find out information. They attended their first TLC conference several years ago, says Bridget. She realized, it's not about the hair, it's about being there for your children, supporting them, loving them, no matter what they look like. Many people with BFRBs say that complete abstinence from picking or pulling is an unhelpful goal that may magnify self-criticism and frustration. Yet one woman spoke positively about her experiences in Hair Pullers Anonymous, based on Alcoholics Anonymous. We celebrate abstinence. Just think of any AA program, she says. They use the same literature and spiritual tools. She joined the support group in January and says in the 3 months since that my hair pulling is down so much you wouldn't even believe it. She has a sponsor she can call if she feels like she wants to pull her hair, and she's also working on self-care, a big emphasis of TLC. Maybe that's why I'm having success, she speculates, because I'm hitting all these things. At the conference, the last session I go to is Standing Tall in Our Awesomeness. It's led by Christina Pearson, who left TLC in 2013 and founded the Heart and Soul Academy in 2014. Roughly 20 kids are sitting in chairs in a horseshoe shape. I take a seat next to the girl with the maple leaf sweatshirt. She's here along with the rest of the kids from the charcoal drawing session and others up to the age of 14. Pearson comes in with a pink fascinator atop her head, holding feathery string puppets. I'm the lady who grew up just like you, and I started TLC, she says. She greets each child individually. Then she asks each kid what they liked most about the conference. Among the most common answers, making friends, everything, all of it. To one girl whom Pearson seems to have spoken with before, she says, you have a huge heart and a sensitive nervous system. The girl appears to be holding back tears. Next, Pearson pulls out a ribbon, gives the end to a child at the front of the horseshoe, then asks her to hold it and pass the rest around. Feel the ribbon in your hands. It is connected to each of you. I close my eyes. The ribbon is smooth. I'm thinking of the girl in the maple leaf sweatshirt, just a bit older than I was when I started pulling. Unexpectedly, I find myself holding back tears. I thank you for tuning in to Sound Body today. Stay well, and please come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.